Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Joe George, Andrew Carlson, RJ Saunders here with you until 2 o'clock on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. The Houston Rockets have won three straight games. Jabari Smith Jr., for the last five, I would say, has played really good basketball. Jalen Green has been pretty good. A lot of shots, not a lot of makes, but a lot of points. It's very, when people like give those Kobe comps to him, and you think back to it, and you're like, okay, first of all, no one should be compared to Kobe Bryant. This is stupid. But the one thing he has very much in common with Kobe is a million shots, a lot of points, and not always a lot of makes. It's like the number one trait they have together. He's just not as efficient as Kobe. I know, RJ, I see your face. You don't like my Kobe slander? There's no Kobe slander here. Kobe Bryant is the second greatest basketball player of all time.
Okay, that's ridiculous. The second greatest basketball player of all time?
Yeah, Michael 1, Kobe 2. LeFraud 3.
Okay, well, that just shows where you're at right there with the LeFraud comment.
LeBron James had to win championships by going to Miami and teaming up with Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade won a title without LeBron before, I mean, Shaq. But I'm team Kobe always. I love Kobe Bryant.
Look, I don't want to get us too off track here.
It's okay. We can go off track.
No, I just know you're upset because he beat your D-Rose MVP Bulls, and you're probably still upset
about
that.
You want to know why I hate LeBron James? Because of Chris Broussard. Because Chris Broussard went on ESPN and said that Chris Bosh and LeBron James were joining the Chicago Bulls to team up with Derrick Rose. And then it didn't happen. That broke my heart. I've never been so excited about a free agency sign in my life than in that moment, because at the time, we didn't think Chris Broussard was a total clown, and we thought he was an actual, like, real reporter, and then we realized pretty much in that moment that he wasn't. But the Rockets are playing good basketball. They've won three straight games, and honestly, it's not hurt. The best part is it's not really hurting their chance at the number one pick.
Because they were so bad. They have so much wiggle room to continue winning basketball games and still get the best possible odds to get the top pick.
Yeah, and honestly, even if you happen to fall into the fourth odds, you still have a 12.5% chance. If you guys don't know how it works, just because refresher, because they changed it. If you have the first, second, or third worst record in the NBA, you have a 14% chance to land the number one pick. If you have the fourth pick in the draft, you have a 12.5%. They're four games ahead of the Charlotte Hornets right now. The Rockets are 18-52. The Hornets are 22-50. So it's still reasonable the Rockets end up with that top three odds to get the number one pick. And then you're just trusting lottery balls or computer equations, whatever they actually do this year to hopefully get Victor Wembanyama. But what we've seen from Jabari Smith Jr., it's nice to see some development for the first time this season, and consistency where you go, okay, everyone thought the Rockets were going to Ben Carroll, like we just talked about. They got Jabari. And this is kind of the first moment where you watch them and you play, you watch them and you go, okay, like maybe they got it right.
This is far and away the most encouraging bit of basketball that we've seen from this Rocket season. And it's not remotely close. I understand that Alpi Şengün has had some moments where he's looked like baby Jokic and been the hub of a relatively efficient offense. But this is something else entirely because of the investment that was put in Jabari Smith with that third overall pick. He was expected to be one of your foundational building blocks for when this team was good again. Whenever this team was making the playoffs and hopefully competing at the top of the Western Conference once again, Jabari Smith was expected to be a key cog in whatever that team ended up looking like. And for the vast majority of the season, it looked like there was not a shot in hell that would ever be the case.
It's very similar to last year in a couple different ways. You brought up during the break how Jalen did this last year.
Yeah.
It was like 30, 40-point games, like 4 or 5 in a row.
Yeah, he was on a tear for the end of last season. Like, he was averaging over 30 for a little bit at the final stretch of last season.
The biggest, I think, comparison between last year and this year, between Jalen Green and Jabari, though, and I'm curious if this is John Lucas as well, that last year, John Lucas really broke down Jalen Green's jump shot. And over the All-Star break, it seemed like they really retooled it. And it was much more efficient than it was before. And Jabari Smith, it seems like his mechanics and everything at this point are much better. And the game winner last night, like this is the type of development that you're hoping to see from a young player. The biggest question is it Jalen Green, where going into the start of the 2023 season, it starts over and all this development is gone? Or are these building blocks to see a potential superstar player?
That's the big question, right? Because as you mentioned, Jalen Green showed virtually no signs of tangible improvement from where he was in the middle of his rookie season to where he was at the start of this year. It's like everything that happened in the final, 15-odd games mm-hmm. of last season just seemingly washed away, and we didn't see Jalen taking that step that everybody wanted him to take. I will say I think it's different with Jabari just because of the efficiency that we've seen from him in these games. Like, it's not like he's all of a sudden become the number one option and he's getting a ton of shots up. He's doing this in an extremely efficient manner, you know, no more typically than 14, 15 shots a game. The game against the Celtics, I think he was 9 of 11 or something like that. Or 10. Like, he was extremely efficient with the touches that he got. And for me, that's the most encouraging sign, is the fact that he's not doing this on a bunch of volume. He is sort of working his way into the offense, continuing to grow confidence in the way that he attacks and the way that he approaches the game on that end of the floor. And I think it from that sense, while you can draw the comparison from a just pure numbers perspective that, yeah, Jalen was hot at the end of last year, Jabari looks like he's going to be hot at the end of this year, I think once you dive into it a little bit more, there's reasons for optimism.
Yeah, and the one thing that is another huge plus is you look at this three-game winning streak. They beat Boston by 2, the Lakers by 4, the Pelicans by 2. So you have close games in which you need big moments from your young superstars, or what you hope are superstars, and you're getting them. Going back to this Lakers game, RJ, you were there. You were at the Lakers game for the Rockets. You were there covering it for us. What was your thoughts? Like, what have you seen from Jabari and this young core over the last couple nights?
I think it's confidence out of Jabari. I think Jabari was a guy who lost it a little bit before he went on this stretch run. I think when you have a guy in Steven Silas who says, I run no plays for him, and then you have the article that came out on Anscape where his dad is saying this guy wanted to cry because he was promised to be selected number 2 overall by OKC, and they passed him. Or, you know, what was the last quote that Steven Silas said? Oh, he's such a perfectionist. Here's a guy, I believe he's hard on himself. He's his biggest critic. You can't put more pressure on him than he puts on himself. But when you don't have a coach that's running plays for you and you don't really, I guess, understand what you're supposed to do, and he still credits Steven Silas now for this hot streak, maybe Steven Silas has pulled him to the side and said, hey, do what you do and we'll follow you.
Yep.
And now he's doing it. Now you can see a guy who has a different amount of confidence. He's now yelling after every basket. He's now high-fiving, slapping hands. The Rockets team looks different now because of just the energy he's bringing on the table. I think he needed this, and this will translate for him in the next season. I think he needed this more than the Rockets team needed it. I know they needed it as a team, but for this guy, who I think a lot of people – either on radio or sports bars or whatever, was probably questioning this guy, for him to now have this stretch run, you can kind of say, we may have something here.
Yeah, I know it's weird when you talk about confidence that, like, people are, well, these guys are NBA players. But these guys are different because guys is almost an unfair term. They're children.
He's 19 years old.
Like, half the Rockets roster can't legally drink. Like, confidence breaks. And when all you do is lose, and that to me is why next season the Rockets need to start winning. Because for a guy like Jalen Green, if all you do is lose for 3 years, what those things that John Wall was talking about what they're getting away with versus what they could on a different team, they become reality. They become who you are as players, as a franchise, and you can't go down that path. You can't be the Orlando Magic. You can't be the Charlotte Hornets, the New Orleans Pelicans. Like, these franchises that have just been a nightmare for so long. The Rockets have way too much history of success, even if it hasn't been a title since the mid-90s. They made the playoffs, 8-10 straight years? This is a franchise that should demand more, and it starts at the top. And that, to me, is the frustration watching the Rockets, is that it doesn't feel like they're pushing this team to get better. And that, to me, is like, you can be a bad team and be improving. And this is the first time this season where I watch them, I would go, okay, I buy this.
Exactly.
And that's brutal. Like, how is Steven Silas still your coach if it's taken this long to develop these players? It's just, honestly, it's unacceptable. And it is frustrating for me as someone that's even not, like, of my hierarchy of teams I'm all in on in Houston sports, they're at the bottom. And honestly, the minute these Tillman Fertitta rumors came out that he's trying to buy the Commies from Dan Snyder, I'm like, what is happening? Like, this is a franchise that's going nowhere, and your owner is more worried about, I get it, it's a billion-dollar industry, 10x what the NBA is. But it doesn't even seem like they're bought in at the top of what they should be, and it's annoying.
They've seemed like a rudderless ship, honestly.
100%.
Basically, since James Harden got shipped out of town, I mean, and even while he was there, they were solely surviving on his talent and his ability to win games with individual brilliance, and then bringing Russell Westbrook and that complete debacle that it turned out to be. Like, they have been a ship without direction for far too long, and you're 100% right that it starts at the top. And yeah, they've got a lot of talented deckhands in terms of the fact that anyone around the NBA will tell you, yeah, there's some really talented pieces on that Rockets roster. Well, if they're so talented, why can't they find a way to actually develop and win games? And you're 100% right, Joe, that the by far most frustrating part of the season is that it has taken us this long to see any signs of real tangible development. And we're 70 games into the season, and it took us till game 65 where we're like, oh, you know what? We're actually starting to see something here. We're finally starting to see green shoots after 65 games. Like, that is just completely and totally unacceptable, and it's what can't be afforded to happen next season.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I also think another issue is, I don't know if anybody understands their roles. I don't know if there's been a role and it being defined. I mean, you have a guy in Jalen Green who comes into the league, and basically they're saying, well, who are his comps? And you hear Kobe, Tracy McGrady. And for a guy like me, when you say Kobe, Tracy McGrady, you're like multiple-time All-Star, scoring
champ, Hall of Famer.
So you're saying he's the man. Now you have Kevin Porter Jr., who Jamal Crawford has co-signed to the dozen, says this guy is great, he's a great player, got a bad rap in Cleveland, you're getting a good guy here in Houston. And he's had, you know, bits and pieces during the last couple years he's been here where he's been a really talented guy. Other times you say, why is he on our team? Then you have a guy in Jabari Smith who's going to look at himself and say, I think I can be the man. I was the man in high school. I was the man in college. I think I can be the man on this team. I don't think that anybody's really defined a role for any one of these guys, and that includes Steven Silas. I think you need to bring in a coach who says, listen, Jalen, this is who you are. This is how we're going to utilize you. We're not going to take anything away from your talent and what you're doing on the floor already, but this is what we need you to be. This is what we need you to be, Jabari Smith, whose comp was Rashard Lewis, which means you're the third best guy on a possible championship team.
Yeah, for sure. If he was Rashard Lewis, like, let's say, I don't even know what they're doing for Wembanyama. Are they calling him Giannis with a jump shot?
They're calling him LeBron.
Ah, that's such an unfair comparison. I mean, comparisons are always unfair. To compare someone to even Tracy McGrady for Jalen Green, like, comparing Jabari Smith Jr. game to Rashard Lewis is so fair because that sounds so obtainable for a player. Comparing someone to Kobe or something like that is so unfair. It's going to be fascinating what happens with the Rockets if they fire Silas. I'm assuming they're going to, who they hire next, what it's going to look like. It's going to be really interesting to see, like, what the direction of this franchise is, of course, how the lottery balls fall. All right, it's the bullpen here, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. The WBC World Baseball Classic. It's underway. Semifinals are here. Jeremy Peña's back. He hit two home runs. But the biggest story out of the World Baseball Classic has been injuries. How do you feel about Astros players playing in it now and in the future? We'll hit on that next here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Back inside the bullpen with the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Joe George, Andrew Carlson, RJ Saunders here with you guys today till 2 o'clock. You guys can find us on Twitter at Joe George Radio, at Carlson Radio, at R Has No J. 713-780-3776. Our question to you is this. How do you feel about Astros players playing in the World Baseball Classic now and in the future? We saw Edwin Diaz, the now highly paid closer for the New York Mets, tear his patellar tendon. I think I said that right.
Well done.
And he's going to miss the whole season. And Mets fans, KFC from Barstool, any Mets fan you find on Twitter, they're upset. And I get it. It sucks. When Hector Neris nearly domed Altuve with a fastball, that would have been one of the worst moments ever, knowing you might lose Altuve for 6-7 months because he got hit by his own guy. Didn't happen, thankfully. But, like, the World Baseball Classic is cool. And it's been interesting to see the reaction after this injury of, are you okay with your guys playing in this game, knowing that in reality, to us, it is kind of meaningless, but it seems like to everyone else, that's not the case.
Yeah, you've listened to all these players from the Dominican, from Puerto Rico, from Mexico, even though I know a lot of Team Mexico's players are U.S.-born nationals.
Same with, I mean, a lot of these teams. Yeah. Team Israel, same thing.
But like they all talk about how much this means to them, especially the guys from Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, from Japan. Like they all talk about that winning this to them would mean as much or more than a World Series. And I understand for a lot of U.S.-based fans, that's very, very difficult to really wrap your head around and understand. But for players from those places, playing with their country across their chest just means something entirely different that I don't think that we're fully grasping. And I don't think that as a fan of the Astros, I have the right to say, hey, you know what? I understand that it means a lot to you, but you know what? It doesn't mean a lot to me, so I want to take this away.
100%. Like, it's some of this is apples to oranges in terms of country size and everything, but you know, 61% of televisions in Puerto Rico have been watching the World Baseball Classic. There has been more attendance at the World Baseball Classic in a week and a half than there was for the entire Oakland A's season last year. Some of this stuff, yeah, how pathetic is that? The Oakland A's had less than 800,000 fans go to their games last year. The World Series, World Baseball Classic is already at over 1 million.
Wow.
And, like, you see Christian Vasquez, he was interviewed, and he said, you know, he is already lucky enough to have 2 World Series rings, but how much it meant to win the WBC for him. So you can't take it away from the players. The injury sucks, but then it's so funny. These Mets fans are the ones that are all pissed off. Then Brandon Nimmo, their starting center fielder, he gets hurt going to second base yesterday at a spring training game. And it's like, well, what do you say now? Because what's more meaningless?
Oh, a spring training game, at least for me.
100%.
Like, for me, these World Baseball Classics, or the games in the World Baseball Classic, are, for a lot of these players, you know, very, very high competitive spring training games. Like that's how I'm looking at them, at least from a like outside perspective, from an Astros perspective, is these guys are getting, you know, 3-4 innings in a bit of a more stress-filled environment than, you know, Palm Beach. But the reality is I don't think that they're changing their routines all that drastically to where you can say, hey, you know what, from playing in this game, you're putting yourself at much greater risk than you would in a spring training game. I think that's ludicrous.
Yeah, it is too, because the pitchers are the only ones that I think there's a little concern. Like Christian Javier is a great example. You know, the other day he pitches, I think he went 4 innings, 51 pitches, dominant. Very Christian Javier. If he was with the Astros, is he already there? You know, pitch count-wise, velocity-wise, probably not. And maybe there's an argument for that, especially a guy that just pitched through the World Series. But if Christian Javier gets hurt in 2 months, and worst case scenario, a Tommy John or anything like that, I'm not going to blame the World Baseball Classic.
Yeah,
it's just not, it's not reality.
I don't think you can do that. I understand your point on saying maybe he's not stretched out normally that much at this point of the season, but if we're saying, you know what, he threw 5 pitches too many or 7 pitches too many, his limit should have been 45 and he threw 52 and he went 4 innings when he should have gone 3, like if we're putting things at that fine a margin, I think it's very, very difficult to say, oh, 100%, you know, we got to do away with this World Baseball Classic because it's the root cause of all these issues.
Yeah, I also think, like, people are, they're like, well, the best pitchers, the best American pitchers aren't participating. The best American pitchers are dinosaurs, okay? Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander should not be participating in the World Baseball Classic. If they were Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander 8 years ago, I have a feeling they probably would be out there. Yeah, it sucks that Adam Wainwright is your lead starting pitcher as this thing starts, and they may not advance today. You know, it's also, it's just, you know, Todd the Show says here on Twitch, as a fan of the Astros, it's awesome to have so many Astros in it. It makes it fun to watch.
100%.
100%. It's just enjoyable. Like, this is everything. The reason why people that are so upset about the World Baseball Classic are wrong is because this is what makes, like, baseball's fun. And these guys playing, they're having so much fun. Randy Arozarena from Mexico has been electric. Every time he's on the field, hitting bombs, making great catches. Like, if baseball was like this all the time, it would be the best sport in the world. But it's not. It's, and like, this is peak baseball. It's like watching the World Series. It's like watching the playoffs in spring training.
It's baseball in its purest form.
Yes,
like, this
awesome.
Is what the sport is supposed to be. And we have gotten so far away from that. Like, you 100% mentioned it. Almost every player that's being interviewed in this tournament has said, this is the most fun that I have had playing baseball in my life. And you're not hearing that. Obviously, guys talk about, you know, the World Series being a dream and everything else. But how many times do you interview somebody in the middle of a Major League Baseball season and they're like, you know what, I'm just having the time of my life right now? It seems like every time somebody steps in front of a microphone, we're hearing something to that effect.
Yeah, it's funny because a lot of these guys, when they say that, people some of the reaction on Twitter has been like, how can you say something like, how can you say this means more to you than the World Series? But you know what? There's a very real chance that, like, let's say USA goes on a run here and wins the World Baseball Classic this year. You know what Mike Trout's going to have? A World Baseball Classic championship and no World Series, and he'll never get one. It's like Carmelo Anthony Olympics. Carmelo Anthony's most decorated part of his career is a national championship at Syracuse and 4 Olympic gold medals. He never won an NBA title. He never played in NBA finals. Like, for a lot of these guys, this is their moment. Not everyone can be the Astros and win 2 World Series. Christian Vasquez has 2 from 2 different teams, and now he's playing in Minnesota with Carlos Correa, and he might not make the playoffs for the next 3 years. So, of course, this means something.
100%, man. And it frustrates me that it doesn't mean more in our country, because I think that there's some level of everyone else is going up against the big bad USA, so that sort of galvanizes the fan bases of these respective countries together to watch it more than potentially we are here in this country. But it does frustrate me that there seems to be a very strong lack of understanding with how important this tournament is to all these other people.
I think maybe we just do it wrong. Like it's the one thing with sports that America doesn't get right. We don't care about the World Cup in the way that we should. We don't care about the Olympics the way, unless a Michael Phelps is there, in the way we should. We don't care about the World Baseball Classic like every other country. And I'm not saying that it's not totally wrong, but it does feel like there's a reason why every other country in all of these sports cares so much more than America. And I get it. Sports are bigger here. Like, they don't have the NFL in Europe. They don't have the NFL in a Brazil, like, for us, like, compared to, like, the World Cup. So, like, this is, like, every day we have all these things to talk about and to watch, and it just doesn't matter as much. But we're the only ones that, like, it just seems to not matter to win these country-style events in sports. And it's kind of, like, not as fun. Like, I get jealous watching, you know, the videos from Puerto Rico last night, watching all these fans watching on a giant screen. Like, that's awesome. Like, I kind of wish we had that for the World Baseball Classic, and there's just none of it for America.
Yeah, and I don't think that there's a way to realistically change that, to be honest with you. I don't think, at least for baseball, that's ever going to change.
All right, last question here from Twitch. Todd the Show goes, am I wrong for going for Team Altuve? So he's saying he's rooting for Venezuela over America.
You know what? How many Astros do we have on Team USA?
2? I think it's 2-2.
Two and two?
It's
okay.
Luis Garcia and Altuve on Venezuela, and then Kyle Tucker and America's closer, Ryan Presley.
You know what?
Team USA.
Altuve's team, Mr. Houston.
So
I'll go Team Venezuela.
It's okay for this one instance?
Also, because I think that it would mean infinitely more to Altuve and Luis Garcia and to Venezuela as a country for them to win it than it would to Kyle Tucker, Ryan Pressly, and obviously Team USA.
I will say, shout out to Apollo Houston. Their T-shirts for Ryan Pressly that say America's Closer are factual, and they're very great. So, all right, it's the bullpen here, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. One thing we have not talked about yet and is NFL free agency. It's kind of slowed down. We're waiting on an Aaron Rodgers trade to still happen. I don't know what in the world is going on with that, besides the fact that I imagine Jake Asman is pulling out his new hair often, because the trade still hasn't happened yet. We'll talk about free agency, what the Texans have done next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Lined up the body, who said they saw me? Crown on by Molly, wrist on your gunny. They gon' judge your life for a couple likes on a double tap. Them sorry, they all get body.
This is the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Just a reminder, next Saturday we will be live from 12 to 3 out at Bobcat Teddy's Ice House on Saturday. On Sunday, RJ BMAC and Sean Mapes will be live from 12 to 3 at Christian's Tailgate Bar and Grill. So come hang out with us. Watch the madness go. We got our first game over with today already. Furman, after a great victory over Virginia, got their asses kicked. They lost 75 to 52. Now, this is my one issue with March Madness before we get to the Texans, Andrew. The first 2 days are so awesome because the games are like right on top of each other. I hate waiting 5 more minutes for this Duke game to start.
You're so impatient.
I wish the game was already started. Like, I wish it was like game one ends, game two is already like 3 minutes in. Like, you're not missing a ton of action. If you go into overtime, you might miss more. Just a little more overlap. I like the constant games on day one and two.
Well, I guess we just need to expand the tournament then to, what, 128 teams to fulfill your needs, Joe?
There was a my needs are what's most important. You were called a communist here in the chat because of what you said in the last segment.
Team Venezuela, baby.
there was a report that, like, the NCAA, some NCAA committee, like, recommended they go to, like, 100 teams. Please don't. Please don't do that. Please don't go past 68. The only thing I want them to change with March Madness is I do not believe that these 11 seeds should be doing the playing games. Like, I think the 16 seeds should be the playing games, or it should all be 11 seeds. Like, the first four out should all be, you know, like Oklahoma State should have had a chance to get in. Like, I don't like the way it's set up. I don't think if you won your conference and you're a 16 seed, you should have to do a play-in game. But I don't like the way it works. Like, I don't like the play-in format. I think it's very odd that, like, some of them are 16 seeds, some of them are 11 seeds. It's very weird to me.
The selection committee does still have some work to do to figure out, I think, the ideal way to expand things moving forward. Because we know it's going to expand. You don't contract. Yeah. You only expand. They're going to add more teams at some point. It's just a matter of finding out what that solution will end up being.
I think it's going to be, I wonder, like, if you'll see a bunch of 16, like, maybe we'll see like 18, like 8 games the first 2 days instead of 4 games. So, like, maybe you start with a slow expansion, because you can't go too, because the one thing you can't do is you can't go backwards. So if you add too many teams, then it's, if you've gone too far down the road, like, you can't go back. So
yeah, I think
it's going to be tricky.
I think the most likely scenario is what you just sort of laid out there. Is the first four turns in, like, the first 8 or something like that. Or maybe it's even the first 6 initially. Like, they will slowly continue to add more layers to the play-in game.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see, like, I mean, maybe it gets to the point where, like, all the 1s, 2s, 3s, and 4 seeds have buys.
I don't need that.
No, I don't need either. Like, it's too much time. Because, like, imagine, like, if, let's say we'll use the Cougs as an example. Let's say there's a world where the Cougs are a 1 seed, they have a buy, but they got knocked out in the second round of the Big 12 tournament. Dude, you're talking like a week and a half off between games. Like, that's versus you're going to have a team that's won their tournament, has now already won 1 March Madness game, and then they're going to play you. You're going to be ice cold. Yeah, it might lead to more upsets, but is it going to lead to a better tournament? Probably not. All right, the Texans. free agency at this point is there'll be some signings. There's some guys out there that are of intrigue across the NFL. Of all the free agents that are left, to me, there's only one guy that I look at as a free agent and I go, I would like the Texans to add this person. I would like the Texans to sign DJ Chark.
Okay.
I think he's a good player. He played okay for Detroit last year. He was better in Jacksonville. He's going to be cheap. I think last year was a one-year, $7 million deal for the Lions for him. So you should get him on the cheap. I don't understand why Brandon Cooks is still on this team.
They're working on it. Don't worry about it.
I think they're trying to keep him. I think that's what they're working on.
Really hope not.
I think they're trying to convince him to, like, come around to the new regime and I don't know, which I think is a total bad decision. He doesn't want to be here. And you can't keep letting these guys sit out for entire seasons and then everything's happy-go-lucky and they're just back on the team. You just let Tunsil do it. Now you're going to let Cooks do it? Like, it just seems odd.
No, the way that he acted last year, with Tunsil, at least there was some slight level of excuse saying, hey, we are effectively tanking.
Yeah.
But the way that Brandon Cooks, and he wasn't never as public about it as Brandon Cooks was, and the way that he behaved and acted for the majority of last season, if you let that guy back on the team and back in the building, I think that would send an awful message to everybody else in that locker room.
The other name that intrigues me is Dalton Schultz, the tight end from the Cowboys. Mike Gesicki, he had a pretty bad year for the Dolphins. Like, they really didn't utilize him, which is why it made sense for him not to be a fit here in Houston. Same style Kyle Shanahan offense that they ran in Miami is what we think Bobby Slowick's going to run here in Houston. Mike Gesicki got a $4.5 million contract, another $4.5 million with incentives. This is a guy who was a pretty good tight end at one point for Miami. He goes to the Patriots. Jordan Akins today reunites with Deshaun Watson in Cleveland. And so there's a gap at tight end. And I don't really want the Texans to draft a tight end at 12. So I think adding someone like Dalton Schultz would be interesting. But that's kind of where I'm at with like what they need to add at this point.
Yeah, Dalton Schultz is a name that I would 100% look at as well, just because of the fact that you have a few gaps that you have left yourself now through your business and free agency that you're going to need to take care of in the draft. We know they're going quarterback at 2. You're going to have to take a center within, the first 3 or 4 picks that you have.
100%.
Because you have, for whatever reason, decided to just leave a gaping hole in the offensive line in the middle there. And I'm not looking forward to the team potentially having a rookie center with a rookie play call or with a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, I don't like it either.
That sounds like a recipe for disaster to me. But you're going to have to address so many of these holes and needs through the draft that I think taking a shot at a guy like a Dalton Schultz who would fill that need at the tight end spot isn't the worst idea in the world. Now, look, you can talk me into, hey, one of these really highly rated tight ends is there at 33 and you take him.
Cool.
I'm cool with that. But Dalton Schultz is much more of a proven commodity, and I would much rather you spend whatever draft capital you need to shore up that off the remaining parts of the offensive line versus drafting a tight end, personally, at least.
No, I totally get that. I'm with you. I think at this point for me, I'm locked in on Bryce Young at 2 or Stroud. I like both those guys a lot. I'm good with either one personally. And then looking at mock drafts and trying to figure out how things are going to fall, I personally think Lucas Van Ness, the pass rusher from Iowa, is my guy at 12. You know, he didn't start in college. If you don't know the story behind that, it's because Iowa is a dumb football organization, and they play seniors over their most talented players. If you look at Lucas Van Ness' snap count, he basically was a starter. He just literally didn't start the game. He would come in on the second play.
That's so idiotic.
And, like, so it's not like a character thing or any whatever. It's just dumbness for Iowa football. So Van Ness is the guy for me. We were looking at a mock draft yesterday on the Killer Bees. They have the Texans taking Peter Skoronski, the tackle from Northwestern, at 12. He's probably more of a guard, honestly, which would be weird with, honestly, where you're at, unless you're going to trade Tunsil and Skoronski's your left tackle or your right tackle with Howard moving to left. I watched Paris Johnson and Peter Skoronski go against Lucas Van Ness this season, and I went back and watched some of the games. He put those guys in body bags, basically. And these are the first two tackles that are going to be off the board. So Van Ness is my guy at 12. And then you figure out the other stuff later.
Yeah. I think you're right that defensive line, Van Ness is someone I like a lot as well, but defensive line to me is where it seems like they're leaning more and more at that 12 spot.
Yeah. Where are you at with, I know once the initial report stuff came out with Jalen Carter of like, would you still take him? It was an interesting debate. And now at 12, I think Jalen Carter, there's a chance he's on the board at 12. He showed up 9 pounds overweight compared to his combine numbers, which was like 3 weeks ago, and he gained 10 pounds. He couldn't finish his drills because he was out of shape. He didn't run the 40. And this is a guy who, during the games in the season, is huffing and puffing and taking an oxygen mask during the college football playoffs because he can't be out there every play. So I'm officially out on Jalen Carter. It's not just the arrest stuff. It's how do you have a pro day, show up that out of shape, to me shows a lack of work ethic and a guy that I don't think this team needs.
Yeah, I understand that DeMeco is an excellent character builder, and that is something that has been lauded about him throughout his time, all the way throughout his growth at the 49ers. But you do not have the locker room in place, at least in my opinion, to really give somebody like Jalen Carter the environment that they would need to truly grow and prosper. Like, I think that a strong locker room could absorb a guy like Jalen Carter, set him on the right path potentially, and have him be an all-pro level player.
100%.
Texans don't have that environment in place, and you can believe in DeMeco's character development skills all you want. A coach can only do so much in that department, and I just do not trust the Texans from a locker room perspective currently in any capacity to set Jalen Carter up for success. And if you're Nick Caserio, frankly, you can't afford to be taking home run swings in this draft. You cannot afford to go up to the plate and swing and miss. You have way too many problems all across the board with your roster to go up there and just totally whiff on a pick that's in the top 15. You cannot afford to do that.
Yeah, it's interesting because the one team that I think would make the most sense for Jalen Carter to stay in the top 10 is at 10. You talk about that locker room?
Yeah.
Why don't we put him on a team that just went to the Super Bowl with the Philadelphia Eagles? That Jordan Davis is there, his former teammate. Like, why don't you put him on the Eagles? And that way, if it's a bust, it doesn't really matter. Or you figure him out and you just still become our by far the best team in the NFC. That, to me, is the thing that makes the most sense, honestly, if he's going to be a top 10 pick. Andrew Carlson, Joe George, RJ Saunders here with you for another 15 minutes on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. It is the one-year anniversary of the Deshaun Watson trade. The Texans have the second pick and the 12th pick. Has it worked out the way you hoped? We'll discuss that next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5. Listening to The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Joe George, Andrew Carlson, RJ Saunders here with you another 10 minutes on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Just a reminder, tomorrow from 10 to 12, you can catch Sean Mapes and Brian McDonald. They'll be there with you from 10 to 12. So today's the one-year anniversary of the Deshaun Watson trade. How do you feel about it today? Pretty good?
Yeah. I feel just about as good as I did the day it happened. Actually, you know what? I'll say I feel better just because of how awful he looked in his little stint for the Browns this past season.
Are you in the belief that that's going to continue? I'm not, personally. I think Deshaun Watson is going to be Deshaun Watson.
I think that he's going to be better, but I don't think that the Deshaun Watson that we saw lead the Texans to the playoffs will ever appear in Cleveland.
That's fair. Like, Watson, to me, might be a guy where, in terms of like fantasy football, you're going to want him on your team every year. The stats are going to be there. Think about that 4-win Texans team. That's statistically one of the greatest seasons of all time from a quarterback, and they only won 4 games.
Yeah, he led the league in passing. It is statistically probably the best season a Texans quarterback has ever had.
Mm-hmm. It could be Will ever.
Yeah, I mean, potentially, at least. We'll see how it goes with the expanded schedule now.
Oh, that's true.
But I think that the reality is Deshaun Watson, he padded stats in that year.
Yeah,
and it made him look so much, but the stat sheet made him look so much better than his actual play did that season. And I understand that they're, you know, mitigating circumstances around that. The offensive line was not great for the majority of that season. Did not have help in the receiver department. But at the same time, Deshaun Watson dug himself in so many holes throughout that entire season. And you would look at first half stat lines where he was awful. It was under 100 passing yards.
Yeah.
Multiple turnovers. And then in the second half, once defenses backed off a little bit, here comes Deshaun Watson and the Texans. They come roaring back, or whatever capacity you can call roaring back, to lose by 10 or 15 still. And the final stat line would look so much better than the actual play on the field when you look at the totality of the game would indicate.
Yeah, I think Deshaun is going to have a – I think he's going to still be a good quarterback in the NFL.
I think so as well.
I do believe that. But the one good thing about this trade is that I do believe that it will not be – the 2024 pick will probably not be as high as 12, but I do not believe the Browns will make the playoffs next year. Because what is happening in the AFC is a joke. I mean, the one thing that sucks for the Texans right now is not only are you bad, the AFC is incredible and not getting any worse. Like, you have who are the top, like, A-tier quarterbacks in the NFC? Jalen Hurts?
Doesn't go much further than that.
That's the list. The next best quarterback in the NFC is probably Dak Prescott. Maybe Matt Stafford if he's healthy. I mean, when Aaron Rodgers goes to the AFC, you're going to have Josh Allen, Aaron Rodgers, Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, Joe Burrow, Trevor Lawrence, Russell Wilson, who I know he stinks, but Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, and Bryce Young or CJ Stroud, whoever the Colts take at 4. And the Raiders could still trade up to 3 with the Cardinals. Many people believe they will do that. You got 4 quarterbacks going in the top 4, and 3 of them might go to AFC teams. The only quarterback taken in the first round last year was Kenny Pickett, and he's in the AFC. There is the worst team in the the worst quarterback situation in the AFC is probably after the draft going to be the Dolphins because of Tua's health. Maybe the Patriots if Mac Jones doesn't turn the corner. The Titans, everyone else, like, in theory, like, money-wise and draft capital-wise, has their quarterback for at least the next 2 seasons. That sucks for the Texans, but it's good for the Texans and the fact that Deshaun Watson will likely not make the playoffs next year.
Yeah, it's been a complete and total arms race in the AFC.
It's wild.
I mean, just listening to those names that you rattled off there, that was 8 quarterbacks that you can genuinely see playing at a Pro Bowl at minimum level next year.
Mm-hmm.
It would be 9 if you think that Russell Wilson is somehow going to have a resurgence under Sean Payton.
Big time.
So if you're saying that there are 8 Pro Bowl to all pro level quarterbacks in the conference, I just don't see. I think you're 100% right. And this is why I feel so good about the Browns trade now in retrospect, is that I just don't see a way that the Browns are sneaking into that mix. Like, even in their own division, like, are they going to all of a sudden leapfrog the Bengals?
No, I think that's
going to be very difficult to see that happen.
No, I don't think so. And if Lamar stays in Baltimore, Baltimore's still very competitive. They could be, like, if Joe Burrow were to get banged up, they could win the division. They could make the playoffs next year. But I think it's more likely than not that you don't see them. I mean, with Aaron Rodgers, you know, he said he intends to play for the Jets. I believe it's still going to happen. He chooses his words very carefully. And I think what he's saying is basically what the Packers are demanding of the Jets is unreasonable. And maybe they want 2 first-round picks, and the Jets should not give that up. They will not give that up. Like, I know, like, I'd be curious, like, what Jake's thought would be if it was 2 first-rounders for Aaron Rodgers.
He would lose his mind. He would not be happy with that.
Yeah, because you only get Aaron Rodgers for 2 years. And I still think there's a chance that Aaron Rodgers does the full Brett Favre 2.0, that he plays for the Jets for a year and he's somewhere else in 2024. Where that is, I don't know. Part of me, Andrew, thinks that there's a chance that if Justin Fields is not good, this year that Aaron Rodgers will be the Bears quarterback in 2024.
That would be...
Because I think just like Brett Favre, this is spite.
You really think it's that deep with him?
Yeah, this is spite. This isn't like, I still want to play ball. This is anger and hatred. And there would be nothing more Aaron Rodgers could do to spite the Packers than somehow end up on the Bears.
Would you even want that?
Hell no. Hell no. If Justin Fields is not the quarterback, they better have the number one pick next year to draft Caleb Williams.
Fair enough.
Like, that's what I want.
Fair enough.
Like, I don't want Aaron Rodgers. That guy sucks. I Jake's all excited. I think he has no idea what he's got himself into.
I really...
Aaron Rodgers
Jake would be mad at me for saying this, but I really hope he's washed just because of how funny it would be. Like, I don't think that's the case, but it would just be the funniest thing to me if you have all this hoopla this offseason and... You know, all these recruiting efforts and everything else, and the Jets give up a first-round pick just for the guy to end up being washed because, you know what? Actually, the broken finger wasn't the issue. He's just not a great quarterback anymore.
Yeah, it would be it would be something. Yeah, the power imbalance between the NFC and the AFC has never been greater, and it is one of the reasons why, like, I don't – back to Texans free agency – why I'm okay with the fact that the Texans are not spending a ton of money because the AFC is stacked. And, like, it's going to take some time to build a really good team to compete in a conference with all of those talented quarterbacks. He's Andrew Carlson. You can find him on Twitter at Carlson Radio. Of course, a part of the Wheelhouse Monday through Friday from 3 to 7. Soccer Matters on Tuesdays from 7 to 9 as well.
You got it.
RJ Saunders on Twitter at RHasNoJ from the bench. And usually our Sunday 10 to 12 show. I am Joe George. You find me Monday through Friday with the Killer Bees. I'm on Twitter at Joe George Radio. BMAC and Sean Mapes will be here tomorrow from 10 to 12 on the bullpen. We'll be back next Saturday. Andrew's going to be fancy in Vegas, so he won't be here, but I'll be. Talk to you guys later.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by.